Former presidential candidate and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders called climate change the most urgent threat to national security. But most government officials and most peace activists don't necessarily make the connection between the havoc that the climate crisis is already creating and will create in the future and the issues of peace and security. One glaring example is the drought in Syria, which pushed tens of thousands of Syrians off their land and into the cities, exacerbating conflicts which precipitated the civil war that has raged for the past 5.5 years, killing up to 500,000 Syrians and displacing millions more. One group that does make that connection is the Trap Rock Center for Peace and Justice in Greenfield, Massachusetts. The center's director, Pat Hines, spoke earlier this month to a meeting in Connecticut that was co-sponsored by the groups Promoting Enduring Peace and the Connecticut chapter of 350.org, which brought peace and climate activists together. Hines is a retired professor of urban environmental health and has worked for decades as an educator, researcher, writer, and activist on issues of environmental justice, feminism, and the health effects of war. Between the Lines, Melinda Tuhu spoke with Hines about how resources dedicated to the military in the U.S. and other nations around the world contributes to the urgent crisis of climate change.
The U.S. military is the largest institutional user of oil in the world, and it is the largest institutional contributor to climate change. The key book, which came out a few years ago, called The Green Zone by Barry Sanders, is probably the only book thus far written by an author who has tried to ferret out documentation in terms of the amount of oil used by the Pentagon. His conclusion is that the Pentagon contributes 5% of emissions to climate change, and no other institution contributes 5% of the global emissions to climate change. His analysis does not include the NATO nations, for example, which our government badgers consistently to contribute to build up their contribution of military budget to NATO, so pushing countries to build their military budgets to be equivalent to 2% of their country budgets. And that means they, too, scaling up with respect to all of these military planes, tanks, ships, and the manufacture, the testing of them in war games, et cetera. All of this contributing more in terms of militarization and warming. And then also the new Cold War tensions, which the military historian Michael Clare has written about recently, among what he calls the great powers, those being the U.S., China, and Russia. So the new Cold War tensions among these great powers, which then causes the buildup of militaries in all of these countries, plus war games with Asian partners in our pivot to Asia to surround China. And just to give an example from one war that we have conducted, this is information which Oil Change International, that is a research group, has collected and put together. The full cost of the Iraq War, which have been estimated to be about $3 trillion, that money have covered all of the global investments in renewable power generation needed between the time they did the report around 2007 through 2030 to reverse global warming trends. So another point about militarism and war and climate change is the trade-off point. If you are dedicating 52% of your discretionary budget, as we are doing in the United States, to the Pentagon and to all of the activities I've talked about, that is the military-industrial complex as well, if we are dedicating that money, that percent of our budget, we are then taking it away from all of the other aspects of the discretionary budget, health, education, welfare, housing, environmental protection, climate change research, transportation, etc. Another piece that they have done as a way of analysis in terms of militarism being an engine of climate change is that rebuilding Iraqi schools, homes, businesses, bridges, roads, and hospitals polarized by the war, as well as new security walls and barriers, would require millions of tons of cement. Cement is one of the largest industrial sources of greenhouse gas emissions.
Patricia Hines, there's been a lot written about how the Pentagon is such a big promoter within the federal government of the need to address climate change and that it's taking the lead in that regard.
First, the greeting of the Pentagon, I would compare to a whitened sepulcher. There is nothing that they can do that can possibly affect the great damage that so much of our resources dedicated to militarism and war do. That said, most of the greening of the Pentagon would encompass putting solar, wind into bases that they have for electricity and research on alternative fuels.
You said in your talk that you address groups concerned about peace and groups concerned about climate change, but you rarely address a group that's concerned about both.
I think we'd make much faster progress and more progress if we brought them together. As someone in the audience said as I was speaking, we work politically in silos. And so I think there's much more power in grassroots groups working in partnership together, which does not mean that we all do the same thing. It's that we support each other's issues, we continue to make the connections between them and build bridges between them so that we have a larger and larger base of activism against war and on behalf of mitigating climate change and becoming a renewable country.
That was Patricia Hines, director of the Trap Rock Center for Peace and Justice. Learn more about the work being done at the Trap Rock Center by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.